Three things. I'm Paul Pope. I love you all. And you're listening to The Action Room.
That's some hot mocha. I love some hot mochaccino in the morning. Don't you, geek goddess Jenny?
Oh, I do.
Oh, man. Are you a coffee drinker, geek goddess?
I'm not. I'm more of a tea drinker.
Ah, okay. What kind of tea do you like?
I like them all, from raspberry spice to everything nice.
Well, this weekend, producer Mike and I took in a whole lot of mocha. Mm-hmm. And by mocha, I no longer mean coffee or espresso or mochaccino. I mean Mocha, the 2010 Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art Indie Comics Festival! Woo! We went to Mocha, and boy, I worked hard for that dumb segue.
Well, no, I mean, it also, you know, plays into the idea of art houses and with the coffee.
That's true.
And
it's very
like
bohemian lifestyle. Mocha is really sort of the, for the uninitiated out there, action listeners, Mocha is like the indie, sort of hipster, emo comic book world. Superheroes really don't show up in the world of Mocha.
Lots of girls wearing glasses. And
right. Everyone looks like they're from the old Scarlett Johansson film Ghost World.
Right, right. Which is from an indie comic.
Which is based on an indie, sort of Mocha-esque comic by the wonderful...
It's pretty hot,
I think.
No, it is. It's a cool look. It's just funny, though. They're trying to separate themselves from mainstream, but they end up all looking the same anyway. So it's like kind
of... A lot of plush toys comics about... It's either sort of like cartoony Hello Kitty kind of comics, or it's like...
It's about love and life and emotions.
Yeah, sort of soap opera, hipster, much like Scott Pilgrim, but without the sort of the fantastical elements.
But we'll get more into that later on, because we're going to have huge coverage after the break.
Big
but,
coverage. We're going to have a video up online, sort of a montage of coverage. There was also a major news story in the mainstream news world where Tiger Woods returned to golf for the Masters.
Yeah.
And
I don't give a shit, but
he got us.
He's a pig.
Right. Did you like him before? Were you a fan?
I was a huge fan of him.
Oh, really?
I so wanted him to win. Now I'm just like, oh, I can't do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, because like without him, golf, no one watches it. So
that's not true. There's like two guys.
Really?
I was watching a little bit of
Steve
it.
Steve Mickles and.
Mickles.
Jack Nicklaus is playing.
Well, he's the one that's, I think, winning right now.
Right.
But nobody has the drive. I mean,
he's like the Michael Jordan of golf.
I guess.
So Nike comes out with this ad with Tiger Woods' dead father from some interview, sort of admonishing him, but also demonstrating some desire to communicate. And parodies sprung up of this.
Well,
video
I was telling
overnight
when we first talked about this online. You know, we looked at it and we were like, "Oh, wow, that's disgusting," or "That's brilliant," or whatever.
Right. Creepy.
And So I was like, oh, we should do a sketch. What about Darth Vader talking to his son, Luke, you know?
Right.
And so, and we thought it was pretty, and we actually, I mean, I was kind of thinking more people would do this one,
right,
you know? It's
right.
kind of obvious to me.
Most of the parodies are about Tiger. No one has kind of done what we did, which is try to analogize the Tiger scenario to other father-son relationships in entertainment.
Geek slant on it,
Geek slant. Mm-hmm. So but, if you want to check that out, that's on our YouTube site. Click on our YouTube link on our homepage.
And you did an incredible impersonation of Darth Vader.
Oh, well, thank you.
I have to say.
Being an actor, a voiceover guy, and a lifelong Star Wars obsessed fan, I really was, you know, a few things clicked into place. I've done James Earl Jones impressions before, but it was just really fun.
Actually, let's play it.
All right.
Luke, I find your lack of faith disturbing. The Force is strong with you. But why did you make out with your sister? Did you learn nothing when you chopped my head off in the dark side cave? Release your anger. Only your hatred can destroy me.
It's amazing.
Wow.
It's like actually Darth Vader.
Maybe someday I'll get paid to do a James Earl Jones
impression. Did you do the actual, like, the
breathing?
Well, no, that was a sound effect supplied by
producer. And we put a little bit on his voice. But
a little echo,
part,
but there was no, for the record, there was no auto-tuning.
No, no.
We didn't pitch my voice down. We didn't have to augment.
I was about to say.
No, because some of my friends were like, that's cool, but is your voice really that low?
Right, right.
Yes, it is, people. When I want it to be. So anyway, so thanks very much for checking out the show and, of course, our YouTube video of Tiger Woods' Darth Vader. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll talk mocha.
Party don't you find the left hand side. Party don't you find the left hand side. It a go bun.
Give me the music, make me jump and
run. It a go down.
Hey, what's up? We're back from break. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and we're talking about Mocha.
Yes, the Mocha Comic Festival. Very, very intense weekend.
Yeah. No, I, you know, when we first started, when we were first going to do this and stuff, this was, like, we looked at this as kind of our bar mitzvah, yeah. You know, us becoming an adult as a podcast.
Yeah. This was Mocha is where the action room becomes a man.
It was an important event, you know. It's kind of like nowadays, I think, you know, the indie world is kind of the next wave.
It's becoming the mainstream. Yeah. It's like Miramax and these indie films became the mainstream studios.
When we went to a few years back when it was kind of starting, it was at a much smaller place.
Yes.
Now it was at the Armory, which is this huge, army facility of
sorts?
Yes.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing.
26th and Lex. It was really cool to be there, and that's also where they filmed most of the movie Schenectady, Philip Seymour Hoffman weird indie movie that came out a few years ago.
I fear it's getting a little smellier, though.
Oh, that smells too?
Well, not much.
Those are like 20% weird smells. Much better than a regular comic convention,
yeah.
I would say.
No, definitely.
And what were these smells? Are they different from the last one?
Well, no, you're just attracting more people from the mainstream with B.O., I think. So
oh, I see.
Like they're so hip rock stars that they don't...
No, I just think, usually at the mainstream superhero-y ones, you have the guys who don't bathe and all that stuff. And I think they're attracted now to the indie world because the indie world is now becoming mainstream.
Right.
So
right.
They're interested in all these indie hipster artists, too, you know. So, I mean, we didn't see hardly any superhero, you know, represented in any of the booths or anything like that. You know, there was maybe one or two.
Oh, nobody dressed up, you mean?
Well, there definitely is no cosplay.
Just the themes of the comics that
were there. No, but that's an interesting point, too, is that there... We were talking about this.
Even the cosplay was like indie hipster cosplay.
Right. People with
a guy with an antler head and
or cat ears or whatever. But
like
the thing
adorable
is,
cat hoodies.
Yeah, but the thing is, there are no booth babes because
the girls are pretty.
Well, because most of the comic book artists themselves are girls. So it's like you don't need booth babes. The booth babes are the artists themselves.
It's like Scarlett Johansson in Ghost World with the nerdy glasses, but she's hot, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had a great correspondent do some work for us on the fly, Scout Durwood. And Mike, how did you first meet Scout?
This happened with Esther Koo too.
Yes, yes.
It's me
That's
watching.
Where we call them from.
Well, occasionally Howard Stern, you know, has comedians on, and he had Scout Durwood on. She was like representing some kind of charity or sorts, and she was actually topless playing the ukulele. But that's not why I was interested in her. No, she seemed
you found Scott Durwood.
She was actually pretty quick, and she could put up with you know, Howard and stuff. Anyway, I thought she'd be good to kind of riff with the people, you know, at Mocha.
And she was fantastic.
She was amazing.
She was super quick-witted. Yeah. She was really funny. You could give her any challenge. So check out that video once again. That'll be on our YouTube site.
But the main question that she was asking all the girls, because we just found this to be the case, is that why do all indie comic book girls wear glasses? Right. What is the deal with that?
80% of them, at least.
Like
and we figured that
poker
maybe...
Poker players or something.
Yeah, maybe 50% of them were based on fashion. And the other ones, just because they're reading so much, their sight is so... But then it was kind of like, well, why don't you wear contacts? But I don't know, whatever.
It's kind of the look. No, not like dark glasses.
I'm talking
like
about sunglasses.
Actual glasses.
No,
not the poker
prescription
player.
Glasses. Yeah, yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, then that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was just... But I think it is a lot style more than anything else.
We saw a lot of great creators. What is cool, I mean, it's almost like the things with the entertainment world in general. Everyone is creating now and getting their stuff out there, which is cool. But then there's so many more. There's like 8,000 mini comics, indie comics, cute, sort of adorable
comics. And
comics.
How many comics about love with stick figures can you draw? You know? It's kind of crazy. But
so we got some good interviews.
The first one we got had nothing really to do with the indie world. It was just these older artists that had worked in the Playboy and Mad era.
Mad Magazine, yeah.
The era in like the 50s, I guess, or something like that.
And they're kind of legends.
They're incredible, and I wanted to get Al Jaffe. And if anybody knows, if you buy Mad Magazine, the fold-in in the back of the magazine was created by this guy Al Jaffe. And you've seen his art. If you saw it, you'd be like, oh, okay, it's him. So let's play. Tony did a little question, and
he told us the secret origin of the fold-in. Mad fold-in.
It was during a time when I first discovered Playboy's fold-out, fancy, colorful fold-out. And even other magazines like Life Magazine and Sports Illustrated and National Geographic, they were all doing, from time to time, a fancy, full-color fold-out.
Right.
And I thought, what Mad should be doing is a cheap, black-and-white fold-in.
Right. The opposite of the fold-out.
The opposite of the fold-out. Just as a one-time gag. Right. Really, right. Just a one-time gag. And I did something with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton and a crowd of people and brought it in and showed it to Al Feldstein, the editor. And I said, Al, you're not going to buy this because it mutilates the magazine.
Right, right.
So he took it into Bill Gaines, and they both came out and said, let's do it. If they mutilate the magazine, they'll buy a second copy to save.
Right. So be it.
Yeah. So I did that, and that was the end of it. And then next month they come to me and they say, can you do another one? Yeah. I said, come on, it's a one-time gag.
Right.
You know, you don't repeat yourself.
Right.
But they said, try. So there was an election coming up with Barry Goldwater and Nelson Rock.
Oh, yeah.
It was a primary fight. And I said, maybe I can do something with this. And I did. And the rest, as they say, is history.
All right.
They just kept asking me to do more and more. And recently I finished the 413th one.
Yeah, it's just funny that it was inspired by something in Playboy, actually.
Yeah,
Mad Magazine.
But that was that same era, which is interesting.
Exactly.
All the editors, they had the editors of Hugh Hefner,
right.
Stan Lee,
and
Harvey
Hugh Hefner
Kurtzman.
Was big into comics at the time, yeah.
No, Stan Lee and Hugh Hefner just remind me of each other, like they're best
friends. Well, in Iron Man, Stan Lee played a kind of a Hugh Hefner type character in that one.
He's the Hugh Hefner of comics.
So Al Jaffe was a real gentleman. It was a real honor to get to meet him, spend time with him. And,
but swinging over to the indie side,
yes.
The cool hipster guy that we needed to get,
right.
Who represents indie pop.
He's a rock star. He's a modern rock star.
And personal, you have a little bit of a crush on him.
I have a man crush on Paul Pope. He's a personal idol of mine. Paul Pope. He created THB, which is a major hit comic in the 90s. He did Batman Year 100. He did a really well-reviewed series called Heavy Liquid and another miniseries called 100%. He kind of excels in just great... And I say hipster in this case affectionately so. Great sort of soap opera, sort of sci-fi mixed with just almost like plays in comic form. He's also designed clothes for DKNY. He's sort of the darling of the literary art world, like art galleries.
He was one of the people who started the whole hipster.
Yes. He was very much ahead of his curve as a creator. So we got to sit down and talk with him, and Scout interviewed him. And it was really great.
Let's listen to the interview.
Scout Durr here for the Action Room here with Paul Pope today. I'm clearly a very fashionable person. Are you getting back together with DKNY to give me more amazing butterfly patterns?
If they call, yeah. I mean, we did two seasons, and it's up to them.
Oh, wow. Ball's in your court, DKNY. Let's go. Tell me a little bit about Battle Boy. What's going on there?
Well, Battling Boy is my new book, and it's going to be a little while before it's out still, but it's a 400-page... monstrous.
It's one for the kids.
It's one for, well, I mean, you know, it's funny. I mean, ultimately they said, let's wait till it's finished to give it a rating. But there's one human death in the book. So I am trying to think it's for young audience, you know.
Even though it's 400 pages, it's still bedtime material?
It could be, yeah. I mean, you know, if Grimm's fairy tales are good enough for kids, you know, I mean, people get put in pumpkins and, you know.
What is the, like, craziest thing that's happened to you in this kind of rock star career you've had?
Oh, God, craziest thing outside of hospital trips?
Hospital trips? Multiple? Trips up? More than what?
Yeah, no, I mean the...
Really severe paper cuts?
Yes, exactly.
You spent some time in Japan, right? A lot of time.
Yep. Yeah, I worked over there for a while, for about 5 years. But it's too much of a hassle to actually move there. For one thing, I don't speak Japanese. You know, I learned a little bit just to get by. But, you know...
Can you give us some Japanese right now?
Sake onegai shimasu.
You just asked for wine, didn't you?
I asked for sake. Yeah.
So I can see where your influences are coming from. Clearly, you wine and dine your way to success. But you are kind of a jet setter. Like, you have really kind of paved the way for rock stardom in the comic world. What's that like, being kind of on the A-list?
You know, a lot of my role models have always been people like Miles Davis or, you know, Richard Ashcroft. I mean, like, musicians, they have a lot of dynamic energy, and they're very expressive people, and I find that really cool, you know, and, like, that's just part of me feels like that. And then outside of that, I mean, it's just, again, it's great to have friends who are really creative and to have an audience of people who are there and, like, you share a love for something, you know. And so it's like a lot of times doing things like this, you wind up getting, like, it used to be like mixtapes, but, like, people would turn you on to, like, new bands or recommendations for, like, a really good restaurant, you know, or that kind of thing.
And I'm pretty sure you're on everybody's mixtape these days. Thank you so much for taking time out and chatting with us.
Thanks.
So we also got to interview Kyle Baker, who's a really terrific artist. He's done so many things. He had a book called Instant Piano years ago. He did Plastic Man for DC Comics, which was hilarious and brilliant and amazing. And sadly
that.
Did not sell, but it was fantastic. And he's done a number of other miniseries since. He did a sort of a MASH-type comedy about the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's off on his own. He also does a comedy strip called The Bakers, kind of about family life.
But the important thing is he gave us an exclusive.
He gave us a really exclusive tease. He said it's too early to announce. He was a real gentleman about it. But he's got a major movie project coming up. He hinted that it was somehow an animation studio, but he had celebrities involved. And he was telling us about it for the first time. So look for that announcement from Kyle Baker
but
in the near future.
That we were asking him if it was like an art studio, and he said, no, a movie studio.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, wow, cool.
Yeah.
All right, awesome.
That's fantastic. He really deserves great success. He's been working in comics for years. I want to see him hit the big time.
Then the next guy is a friend of yours, Dean Haspiel.
Dean Haspiel, one of the true gentlemen of comics, very multi-talented writer, artist. He's worked with Harvey Pekar.
Who's the American Splendor guy?
American Splendor. He did a book called The Alcoholic with a famous hipster literary writer named Jonathan Ames. And Jonathan Ames created the HBO show Bored to Death, starring Jason Schwartzman, Ted Danson, and Zach Galifianakis. Zach Galifianakis' character is based on Dean Haspiel. Anyway, Dean Haspiel also created this webcomic collective called Activate, which has been a real success and has been trumpeted by Warren Ellis and other people.
And another awesome guy that we interviewed who organized this event, and he is the guy, he is the reason why we got all these interviews and stuff, is Jeff Neuwelt.
Yes.
Who,
a true gentleman and scholar.
Who, a.k.a. Ja Furry.
Ja Furry! He's
and,
into reggae!
He's like a publicist, performer, and
does he
connector.
Have
no, but no. I think he'd like them.
Yeah.
The little
he's a huge,
pink beads at the end.
Yeah. He's a huge comics fan. He's a big music, arts fan. He just really wants to promote good work. And he's an incredibly generous, supportive guy of anyone in the arts. And we got a great interview with him, and he really helped us, as you said, get all those other interviews. Mm-hmm. And he was kind enough to invite us to the Mocha After Party, which was quite an interesting scene. And everyone wondered, who will show up to the Mocha Party? Which comic celebs will show up?
Now, I'm not big on after parties. I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
But
we were all tired after a long day of 5 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it was just too long to, like, schmooze at that point. But
I had a little schmooze in me.
No, Tony always has a little bit. It's kind of like a toothpaste tube. He always has a little bit left in there. So we went to, what was it, the Poorhouse?
P-O-U-R yes, the
Poorhouse. And the one person that I told Tony to let me know, but it probably got too late. The one reason I would have gone is if Frank Miller went.
He was the crown jewel of our interview goal.
That was the one person we couldn't get.
Right. He doesn't want to do press. I don't think he did any press for the entire convention.
I took it personally. But no, but he did.
I'll give him a piece of my mind.
He did end up coming there and tell
us the story. He came out to the, it was kind of a spacious area, but there were a lot of people packed into it, a little tight quarters.
It's called a bar, yeah.
It's called a bar. And Frank Miller shows up at like 10, and suddenly a whisper goes through the geek community. A whisper goes through waves. Did you hear Frank Miller's here? I hear Frank Miller's here. I sent out a person to scout around and see where Frank Miller's sitting. Oh, he's in that booth over there. And I later found out that there weren't many booths to sit. And apparently Frank Miller showed up with a little like entourage.
You said he was kind of like a Frank Sinatra. Like,
well, it was. It's apparently someone was like, Frank Miller wants your table. Get up.
Yeah.
Whoever's sitting there, just get up. Frank Miller's here. And everyone was like, oh, yes. Okay, sir. Yep. So
crazy.
Frank Miller sits there. He kind of holds court there.
Right.
He's all in black with his black fedora.
And nobody can get near him.
Nobody can get near him unless you're like Dean Haspiel or, you know, an already established comic celebrity. And it was funny. Yeah, a friend of mine, this really good comics guy that I met, he goes, it's like Frank Sinatra came into a club and everyone just like all attention focuses on him. It's like, ooh, that's Frank Sinatra. He's over there. You want to look at him? He's sitting down.
Yeah. Because next to Stan Lee, there's no one bigger really in comics.
Yeah, especially after the Sin City movie. Prior to the Sin City movie, we all kind of worshipped Frank Miller, but, you know, Sin City is what? put them on the map for the
and 300
and 300
and the Spirit. We'll let him go on that one.
The much maligned Spirit.
So that was a packed show, but let's just run through the nerd news real
quick. Okay, nerd news, go.
Nerd news.
Okay, so first in the nerd news, we're going to go through these really quick. In the Captain America movie casting, they've already cast their Bucky, some guy who was on Gossip Girl. Steven Sebastian.
And I think
something?
He was just the bad kid in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, really?
I saw that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now they're looking.
He tried out, I think, for Captain America and didn't.
Exactly.
Make it.
Oh, really?
Okay.
He was an early. Maybe he was in like the top 16 originally,
yeah.
You know,
okay.
For Cap. It's like the Final Four for any basketball fans who are listening, which
but
I'm not.
Good choice that they didn't pick him for that. But
yeah. No, he's not Cap. He's a good Bucky. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Now they're looking for the leading female role, who is World War II glamorous, beautiful British spy. Peggy Carter, who helps in World War II, helps Captain America, and they fall in love. And Alice Eve, the hot British blonde from the movie She's Not That Into You, is the lead contender. They threw around Keira Knightley's name. I don't want Keira Knightley. I want me some Alice Eve.
She's still not on my radar, but you think she's hot.
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And you know what? She has curves. She's like not rail thin and weird like Keira Knightley is. And I just also it would be good to have a real British person, but just not Keira Knightley.
Gotcha. Okay.
So also in Spider-Man casting news, I was shocked. We covered the convention all weekend. I didn't even look at the internet in terms of news much. Mark Webb, the director of 500 Days of Summer, is doing the new Spider-Man movie. He'll be directing it. And it's going to be written by the guy who wrote the Zodiac movie,
that's awesome.
Screenwriter, which is a great film. And they have a guy who apparently is almost 100% confirmed for the role of Spider-Man, Logan Lerman, and he was the lead guy in the Percy Jackson and the Olympians movie. Did you see that movie?
I didn't see the movie, but I know who you're talking about.
Right.
And
so Percy Jackson becomes Peter Parker. It looks like it's going to be a done deal.
I mean, yeah, it is a done deal. I just don't think they should be doing it so fast.
Oh, like after the previous Spider-Man movies?
I think it's a little too soon.
I guess they just got to reboot everything. You know, I mean, is
that
this,
seems to be the trend.
Is this going to last, even? Or are they going to reboot
if
it again?
If it's successful. I think the strategy is if your movie makes shitloads of money, you continue as a trilogy. If you don't, you wait 5 years and then you reboot.
Right. And I think Marvel is doing a good job, so they're not going to fuck it up. Not that they fucked up the older one.
No, well, the third one, Spider-Man 3 sucks, but otherwise.
All right, and so we have, of course, another death. We always have to have a death every time.
Very
on the
sad.
Episode. Is Malcolm McLaren, who is the who was the manager of the Sex Pistols,
and he created the Sex Pistols.
He put them together. It was the Sex Pistols were kind of like a boy band. He was kind of the Ron Perlman of and he was married to Vivian Westwood, who's a big clothing
and
person.
Lauren Hutton for a while.
Okay, and so anyway, he died, which was really odd because I was promoting for a while that Public Image Limited, which is the band that Johnny Rotten formed after the Sex Pistols, after 18 years of not performing, they were going to be on Jimmy Kimmel, which they were. And the next day, Malcolm McLaren at 64 died.
Did you watch that performance?
Yeah, it was okay. You know, it's interesting because Pill is the type of band that I don't think would read right to people who have never heard them before.
Right.
I just
Johnny Rotten kind of doesn't really sing. He just kind of yells.
He's like a billy goat, yeah. but anyway, and then you told me that Alan Moore was writing a book about Malcolm McLaren.
No. Malcolm McLaren enlisted Alan Moore to write a screenplay for a film that Malcolm McLaren was going to direct called Fashion Beast. And the pitch was Beauty and the Beast set in the modern fashion world. And it was also based, apparently, on some elements from Malcolm McLaren's life story.
Right.
And now they're going to make that, Avatar Press is going to make that into a graphic novel, that unproduced screenplay.
That's cool.
So
because he had a store called Sex in England, and it sold like a lot of domination and
in
rubber
outfits. 1970 or 69?
Yeah, early, mid-70s.
Because this is what started the punk rock movement.
Everybody
and
was
rubber, leather, pins.
Safety pins and stuff like that. And he saw
spikes, chains.
He saw people like Johnny Rotten and said, hey, you look like a interesting kid. Let's put you together. And, you know,
cool.
They made the Sex Pistols.
I like
stuff.
That.
But they kind of hated him because he was kind of the Ron Perlman. I think he used them and, kind of thing.
Like the Runaways, that Joan Jett.
Right.
Or like, the Backstreet Boys or any of those bands.
Oh,
gosh. So, but anyway, all right. So, what a rip.
What?
Malcolm McLaren rip.
Oh, R.I.P. It sounded like what a rip. Like, what a rip off.
Yeah, I know.
What a rip off, Action Room.
Well, that's
R.I.P.
Johnny Rotten's famous line at the end of the last Sex Pistols concert. You ever feel like you've been cheated?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Anyway.
So, that's our quick nerd news roundup. Check out our Mocha video and also our Tiger Woods Darth Vader video. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That's right. Join our Twitter empire, which is slowly growing. And we always paste stuff on post. We post stuff on Facebook as well. It's been a long weekend, people. Very hyper and very tired. So thanks so much for listening, Action Room fans. We'll be back next episode with new stuff. And anything else, Producer Mike?
No, I'm done.
All right. I'm done. I'm going to take a nap for like 6 hours.
I wanted to try that. Wait. How do you do that?
Wait, try that again.
That's your Darth Vader breathing.
That was a snort, and that was like a snorting. I can't. How do you do that? What do you?
Yeah, that was Darth Vader. That was Darth Vader sleeping.
It's Darth Vader with an asthma inhaler.
No. Nose right.
You just kind of go. You don't.
It's not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen.
No?
Okay.
Can you do a second try?
That's a little better.
That's like smoking weed.
Yeah, yeah. That's Darth Vader inhaling. That's
a, give me a toke of that, Darth.
Pass that.
Pass the duchy, Darth. All right.
Oh,
well,
God.
On that note, people thank you so much for your listening and your support and your ears and your eyes, Action fans. I'm Tony Wolf.
The Geek Goddess.
Michael. Producer Mike.
Producer Mike. Whoa. All right. We're going to go take a nap. We'll see you next episode.